Welcome to another of the AAT's podcasts for members, helping you to cope with difficult issues that you or your clients may have to confront. This podcast explains what to do when making payments for casual labour, something that many businesses have to do from time to time. Casual labour may be used when extra help is needed, to fill temporary gaps in the workforce, or to provide additional labour at busy times of the year, perhaps in the summer holiday season or at Christmas. Seasonal demands will be dependent on the type of business of the payer, and you should be aware that there are special rules for harvest workers and for students employed in the holidays, both of which I will discuss later. When that person or those persons are first taken on, a decision needs to be made as to how to correctly treat the payments made to him, her, or them. The minimum requirement must be to record the name and address and the amounts paid, plus, if possible, the unique tax reference and or the individual's national insurance number. Although, frankly, such information may be difficult to obtain for a short-term casual engagement. I must warn you and your clients that cash-in-hand payments to unnamed persons are not acceptable to HMRC. Officers identifying such payments may suspect them to be untaxed payments of overtime or bonuses to existing employees or perhaps to members of the family. HMRC guidance refers to concerns about low wages being topped up and such employees perhaps falsely claiming benefits that are excessive or not due. The potential consequences are therefore very serious, and the cost in terms of unpaid income tax, Class 1 national insurance contributions, plus interest and severe penalties could be very high. In the more serious cases, HMRC might decide to prosecute, and that could prove to be a very unpleasant experience. It is therefore worth repeating that the minimum requirement when making payments for casual labour is to record the name and address of the recipients and the amounts paid to them. That information should be retained for at least 3 full closed tax years, plus the current tax year. This is to satisfy the PAYE regulations if the payments are deemed to be employment earnings. Construction Industry Scheme regulations also require that records are to be retained for the same period of time, but I will say more about the Construction Industry Scheme later in the podcast. One of the first considerations when engaging casual labour will to be decide if the contract between the casual labourer and the employer or the engager is a contract of service, otherwise known as a contract of employment, or a contract for services, generally regarded as self-employment. It is wrong to assume that casual labour falls automatically into either slot, because someone can be employed for just a day or part of a day, and similarly, can provide services on a self-employed basis for anything from a matter of hours to much longer periods. It will always be dependent on the precise terms and the conditions of the engagement or the employment. Part 5, page 22 of HMRC's Help Book E13 provides guidance on taking on a new employee, and it states that an employee is anyone you employ under a contract of service and includes full-time and casual workers. Note there, of course, it does include casual workers. It then goes on to say that if an employee does not give you a P45 because they claim to be self-employed, you must look at the terms on which you took them on. Again, that's very important. We are then referred to the HMRC website Guidance on Employment Status. The website link is www.hmrc.gov.uk/employment-status. Worth looking at. It is important to note that we are told to check with your tax office if in any doubt, and that you must treat them as an employee in the meantime. So again, note that the revenue's view is that if in doubt, you've got to operate pay as you earn until you're told otherwise. Failure to do so will mean recovery from what they will regard as the employer. Now, this podcast is not specifically about employment status, but as a general guidance when looking at casual labour, I would advise your clients to treat casual labour individuals as employees and operate PAYE and then deduct Class 1 NICs if appropriate if these people are just providing some extra labour and cannot readily prove that they are providing services through an existing business. If they have got a business, I want to see evidence of that business. This might be their headed note paper, and I would certainly expect them to be able to provide a bona fide invoice before payment is made. I would not expect you to be paying petty cash payments for casual labour to someone claiming to be self-employed. A self-employed van or lorry driver using his own vehicle should be accepted as self-employed because of the investment in the vehicle. But a casual driver who has to drive the employer's vehicle is almost certainly going to be treated as an employee. Now, it might be different if the driver has a haulage or van delivery business, but happens to be asked to drive the engager's vehicle, not use his own. You will have in existence a business, a vehicle, shall we say, that can justify self-employment. Now, one common problem picked up by HMRC employer compliance officers is the payment to an office cleaner. Although this is not normally a casual labour issue, it might arise when someone does the cleaning when the employed cleaner is on holiday or absent due to sickness. We have specific Social Security categorisation of earners regulations that provide that if there's no contract of service, the worker is treated as an employed earner under the regulations when employed as a cleaner of an office or premises other than a private dwelling house, or a cleaner of any telephone apparatus and associated fixtures other than apparatus and fixtures in premises used as a private dwelling house. Under the regulations, the secondary contributor is treated as the agency or third party which supplies and pays the cleaners, or the person with whom the cleaner contracts to do the work. So in other words, my client, your client, making a payment to a cleaner just to clean the office will be regarded as the employer or the secondary contributor, and national insurance will be due. The regulations only apply where there is a primary requirement for the cleaner to physically clean the premises or the apparatus concerned. Where the cleaning is merely incidental to running a cleaning business, then they would not be subject to the legislation. And of course, this is one of the key elements. If you've got an individual providing their labour to clean an office on a temporary basis or otherwise, then they really have to be treated as an employed earner. If they have a business and they provide their own equipment and perhaps use other people to do the cleaning, then clearly we don't have a tax or NIC issue as regards employment. Now, the next thing I want to look at is casual labour in the construction industry, because again, this is something that AAT members often ask me about, and it's quite an issue. Casual labour in the construction industry presents a different set of problems, but the starting point would still have to be the minimum requirement to record the name and address of the recipients and the amounts paid to them. Next, we have to consider whether the casual labourer is self-employed or an employee of the business, which has even more significance than in other non-construction scheme businesses. If the worker is an employee, pay-as-you-earn procedures must be applied, and income tax and Class 1 NICs must be deducted, remembering, of course, the risk to the employer contractor of losing gross payment status as subcontractor for failing to deduct and pay over the PAYE and NICs due on time. If the worker is to be treated as self-employed in the construction industry, then the contractor will need to record more than the name and address and the amount paid. The self-employed casual labourer must not be paid for the first time until he has been verified with HMRC to establish his tax payment status. In order to verify the self-employed casual labourer, the contractor will also need the unique tax reference number, a national insurance number, and the business name if this happens to be different from the casual labourer's own name. If that information is not available, which might be the case if someone is taken on at short notice to do some casual work, the subcontractor's details will not match the revenues computer, and 30% tax will have to be deducted and paid over to HMRC. Now look, if in doubt, my advice is again to treat the worker as a casual labour employee and deduct pay-as-you-earn and national insurance contributions as appropriate. Okay, let's move on. Let's look at operating pairs you earn on casual labour payments. Again, HMRC's guidance is the Help Book E13 Day-to-Day Payroll. It is the main guidance available, and we start with the P46 procedure, where the new employee does not provide a P45 from a former employment. That is probably the most likely scenario for casual labour employments. The P46 is a two-page form providing details of the employee's name, address, national insurance number, date of birth, the date the employment started, then the employer's details, and finally we have the statements A, B, or C to determine what tax code number to apply. If the employee is able to complete statement A, confirming that this is my first job since last 6th of April, and I have not been receiving taxable job seeker's allowance or incapacity benefit or a state or occupational pension, then emergency code on a cumulative basis can be used by the employer. If statement B is ticked to confirm that this is now my only job, but since last 6th of April I've had another job, or I've received taxable job seeker's allowance or incapacity benefit, and it says I do not receive a state or occupational pension, then emergency code on a non-cumulative week one or month one basis can be used by the employer. If statement C is completed, stating that I have another job or receive a state or occupational pension, or if the P46 is not completed by the casual employee, code basic rate must be used, deducting 20% tax from every pound paid, and there's no lower limit for this. Perhaps statement C or the non-completion of the P46 will be the most common situation we'll encounter with casual labour. Now, since 6th of April 2008, when a P45 has not been provided and the employer files P46 forms online, the casual employee may not have to complete the P46, but the employer will need to obtain the relevant P46 information from that casual employee. My thinking is that this is unlikely to be workable for casual labour employees, and it is probably advisable to insist on the completion of the paper P46 or to just deduct tax using code BR, basic rate. If a P46 is signed and the casual employee ticked box A or B, and if they earned less than the National Insurance Contribution's lower earnings limit, which is £90 weekly or £390 monthly for the current year, that means that no tax or National Insurance Contribution deductions are required. The employer only then needs to record the name, address and the amount paid, what I've said already, the minimum requirement of reporting, and should retain the P46 for future use. If tax and or national insurance contributions are deducted, the employer should prepare a Form P11 deductions working sheet for this new employee to record the details, and then the P46 should be sent to HMRC on the employee's first pay day. I would add that the P46 has no relevance to NICs, which should be deducted in the normal way if the earnings exceed the weekly or monthly earnings threshold. Probably weekly earnings threshold in most casual labour cases that we'll come across. Now I would like to discuss the treatment of what I like to call the true casual labour employee. The true casual is someone that is taken on as an employee but for 1 week or less. Guidance can be found on page 27 of the HMRC E13 Help Book. The P46 procedure does not apply here, and we're told to deduct tax using code basic rate if we know that the employee has other employment, or to deduct tax using emergency code on a week one or month one basis if we don't know that the casual employee has other employment. If the earnings exceed the National Insurance Contribution's lower earnings limit, the employer should prepare a Form P11 deductions working sheet to record the details. If the total pay in the week is less than the NIC's lower earnings limit, the employer does not need to prepare a Form P11 deductions working sheet, but must record the minimum details of the employee's name, address, and the amount paid. So there we have it. Casual labour, likely to work for a period of time in excess of a week, use the new employee provisions, perhaps having to do a P11 deductions working sheet. In most cases, we may be talking about casual labour being employed or engaged for a day or a week, but not expected to work again, so we might be able to treat them as a true casual and then deduct tax using the emergency code unless we know they've another job. Deduct national insurance in the normal way if their payments exceed the threshold. Now let me look at students. Students and the Form P38S procedure, which again is sometimes causing confusion with employers. The use of students as a form of casual labour is very commonplace, but the favourable P38S procedure is only relevant to students who work for you or your client during the holiday periods. The Form P46 procedure will apply instead of the P38S procedure if any student is being employed to work outside of the school or college vacation periods, perhaps in the evenings or at the weekends. The fact that they're a student is irrelevant if they're just going to be employed as a casual outside of the holiday periods. Where the P38S procedure does apply, code NT, no tax, should be used, but the amount paid to the student needs to be monitored. The student declaration says that they will not earn more than the single personal allowance limit, and if checks are not made and if the pay-as-you-earn threshold is exceeded in the payments made by the employer, an underpayment will arise and the tax liability will be recovered from the employer. The CWG2 Employer's Guide to PAYE and NICs is quite clear about this. It says where the personal allowance limit is reached, code OT week 1 or month 1 must be applied from the date that the limit has been exceeded. In terms of national insurance contributions, the P38S procedure has no relevance whatsoever. It does not apply to Class 1 NIC. Class 1 NIC deduction should be made in the normal way for any student that's over the age of 16. If a student is paid more than the NIC lower earnings limit during the year, deduction should be made by the employer and paid over. At the end of the year, a form P14 should be completed, entering NI in the code space if there's no tax deductions. Obviously, if there were tax deductions as well, we'd have a normal P14 completed. Now I want to look at the reporting obligations. It is important to remember that employers are required to keep a record of all payments made to and deductions from directors and employees. And when I talk about employees, I am of course including casual employees. The details to be recorded are all payments made to employees, all deductions including income tax and Class 1 national insurance contributions, any statutory payments, including statutory sick pay, statutory maternity pay, statutory adoption pay, and statutory paternity pay, student loan deductions if applicable, and then expense payments and or benefits in kind. HMRC compliance officers will be looking for and at these records when they visit the employer. Now, another aspect of the reporting obligations for casual employees is the end-of-year P38A, Employer's Supplementary Return. Casual labour has to be reported on the P38A Supplementary Pay-as-you-earn Return if a P11 deductions working sheet has not been prepared. In other words, if there's no P14. And it says it covers workers for whom you have not completed a Form P14 or a Form P38S for the year. This form is often overlooked by employers, but the question should be part of our tax year-end checks. Employers have to complete one of the two declarations covering workers for whom neither a P14 or a P38S return is being submitted to HMRC. The declaration on the front of the form removes the need to complete a list of casual workers earning below the income tax threshold. So that's an easement. Employers are asked to look at your records for each worker and consider whether, firstly, your older form P46 that has been completed at either statement A or B by that worker, and the worker was paid less than for 2007-08, £87 every week, or £377 if paid monthly. For the current year, it will be, when the return comes around, £90 and £390 if paid monthly. The employer has to sign the declaration. The two sections A and B on the back of the P38A then restrict the amount of reporting. For casual workers earning less than last year £87 in a week, or £377 if paid monthly, and taken on for a week or less, do not need to be reported at all at sections A or B. Casual workers employed more than once in the tax year, but for separate engagements of up to a week, will have to be reported at Section B of the P38A, but only if they were paid more than £100 in total in the year. I'm talking there about the year to 5th of April 2008, but that £100 limit has existed for many years. So bear that in mind. Casual labour, there is a reporting requirement potentially after the end of the tax year, and we have the P38A form to deal with this. Now, another form of casual labour, and one commonly used in the UK, is for harvest workers. Harvest workers are also to be included in Section B of the P38A, and there's special guidance on harvest workers in the CWG2 Employer's Guide to Pay As You Earn and National Insurance. That gives more advice on their special treatment. Basically, what we've got for harvest casuals is a special arrangement. If the person is a daily casual and is taken on for one day or less and is paid off at the end of that period with no contract for further employment, the action required by HMRC is, first of all, you do not have to deduct tax. You keep a record of the employee's name and address and the amounts paid. Note that again, the minimum requirement to keep a record of the employee's name, address and the amounts paid. Then enter these details on form P38A at the end of the tax year. Next, we've got an employee taken on for no more than 2 weeks and has not been taken on previously by you since the 6th of April and paid above the PAYE threshold without PAYE being applied. Again, we're told, do not deduct tax. Keep a record of the employee's name, address and the amounts paid and enter the details on the form P38A at the end of the tax year. Now, if the employee, the harvest casual, is taken on for more than 2 weeks, we're told that no special procedures apply and the normal procedures must be followed, which we've talked about already for other casuals. So the special rules for harvest casuals are basically where a harvest casual is taken on for not more than 2 weeks. On the national insurance side of harvest casuals, we have guidance which says the employee is employed as a regular casual, for example, taken on for a specified period and paid at regular intervals, then there's no special NIC rules, just apply the normal procedures. But if the employee is engaged on an irregular basis to work outdoors harvesting perishable crops, is paid off at the end of each engagement, for example, at the end of the day, has no contract for further employment, well, in those circumstances, NICs will not be collected where it is impossible for the employer to identify individuals and record their earnings. If the identity details are known, NICs are due when the earnings for each engagement exceed the earnings threshold. And we're told to work out the NICs due at the time the earnings are paid, complete a form P11, as we talked about already. Well, in summary then, payments for casual labour are always likely to come under scrutiny by HMRC officers that are undertaking employer compliance reviews. So we're going to see this when our businesses or our clients are reviewed by the revenue from time to time. As I stated at the outset, the minimum requirement for any employer or contractor is to record the name and address and the amounts paid for the casual labour. I've warned that cash-in-hand payments to unnamed persons are frowned upon and could prove to be very costly. The tax, and where relevant, the NIC's treatment will depend initially on the employment status of the casual labourer, but it is wrong to assume that casual labour can be automatically employment or should be automatically treated as self-employment. The decision will be dependent on the terms and conditions of the contract, which must be considered to determine if it is a contract of service, which is employment, or a contract for providing services, which will be self-employment. The failure to operate pay-as-you-earn and deduct Class 1 NICs is regarded as a serious matter, and one that can prove costly in terms of making good the amounts unpaid, plus, of course, interest and penalties. I've also warned about the further implications for businesses in the construction industry and the risk of losing gross payment status as a subcontractor. We've talked about the special rules for casual employees that are taken on for 1 week or less, and also for students and for harvest workers. Employers and their advisors need to be aware of these special rules in order to be able to comply and to avoid costly settlements, which are going to become even more costly as the new penalty provisions kick in later this year. I hope, then, that this podcast will have helped you in dealing with some of these difficult matters. Thank you.